Hello, I'm Brian.
And I'm Caroline.
I'm Claire.
And this is a Computer Weekly
Downtime Upload
podcast.
Welcome to the podcast and welcome back to the podcast if you're a regular listener. So this week, spreadsheets in the news. And it was England's test and trace programme lost positive COVID-19 test results in transit. Thanks, it would seem, and there's still an investigation into this, to a spreadsheet error. I say last week, we're recording on Friday the 9th of October, and this fiasco came to light last weekend. It was a very popular topic of conversation at the beginning of this week. So 15,841 coronavirus test results had gone AWOL over an eight-day period. So those results didn't make it from Public Health England over to the contact tracing system, track and trace, in a timely manner. So Excel is clearly Microsoft's fault.
Well, they say IT glitch, and they blame the spreadsheet. I think it's more how the spreadsheet was being used and also the version of it that was being used and whatever reason it couldn't accommodate as much data as they wanted it to, which is why, as you say, 15,000 and more positive COVID tests disappeared into the ether, but have been added back in now.
Yes, it's all been rectified. But in the meantime, damage has clearly, well, probably been done.
There are people wandering around who are positive who didn't know.
Yeah.
Obviously, there's that aspect of it as well, but also I guess people's faith in the systems that have been put in place. So that does kind of, I think, knock people's confidence a little bit in sort of these tools, which are supposed to be keeping us all safe.
Yeah, that's a really good point. That is a really good point. I think the essence of it was they were using .xls and not .xlsx. So they're using an older version of Excel, which was maxing out at 65,000 rows of data. Whereas if they've been using a more up-to-date one, then there wouldn't have been the problem. A lot of people have been saying, oh, why are they using Excel? You know, it's not a database. I don't know that I'm not willing to commit myself to saying they should not use Excel, because that's what people use and they're comfortable with it. And if you're trying to solve a problem quite quickly, then you're going to use the tools that you're used to using and comfortable with. It's just a pity it was an old version.
Until recently, a lot of people learn Excel as part of like school.
Absolutely, yeah.
So if it's something that you can achieve using that, then why wouldn't you if you already have those skills? Whereas finding someone with, you know, like database skills might be slightly more difficult.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. It's very ubiquitous, the use of Excel. I mean, we use Word, but there are lots of people in our company who use Excel. It's just a really natural tool for a lot of business users to use. In the data management field, people kind of look down on Excel, or it's like beneath notice almost. And there are companies who say, oh, you'll never believe this, Brian, people run their businesses on Excel. And I'm like, oh my God, tell me more. This is terrible. When they're punting their own stuff that's an Excel spreadsheet killer. I mean, Anaplan come to mind, and Anaplan's very good, very interesting use cases with Anaplan. And there are similar companies to that, which basically will, not basically, because there's nothing basic about it, but things like forecasting and budgeting and scenario planning, you shouldn't really be doing that in Excel, Anaplan would say. People do. People use Excel for all sorts of numerical stuff and even non-numerical stuff. But I guess you would both have learned to use it when you were at school as well.
Yeah, and then tried to forget how to use it quite as quickly as possible as well.
You never use Excel.
I'm not a numbers person, so it just had no interest to me.
Well, we had to do a project in it for A-level where we created a BMI calculator using Excel.
Oh.
Like coursework based on it.
I was doing an MBA course once, and on the accountancy module, the tutor said, compared to doing an MBA, learning to use Excel really well, and this is to a bunch of business professionals, will be much more important for you. So, you know, it can't be completely useless. But anyway, they were using a version of Excel to do something to do with their workflow that was clearly, inappropriate and led to a bad result. And no doubt some IT professional in government will be in trouble. Can I just make a quick plug for a feature by Stephen Matheson that's kind of related to this? It's the headline is UK Government Coronavirus Data Flawed and Misleading. And that's my title, so that's my contribution to Stephen's feature. But this goes into the medical statistics that have been used by the government since the beginning of the pandemic in quite a lot of detail. It's a really good feature. I'll include a link to it in the summary article for the podcast. Okay, guys, just to indicate where we're heading in this episode, top line. Claire, can you believe it's a week since the Diversity in Tech events?
I really can't. I still feel like I'm in the, I don't know how to phrase it, almost like a hangover, event hangover. It's been a week hangover of relief that it went how it did. And also, I'm not having to worry about it anymore.
But you're going to be discussing it on the podcast.
Absolutely.
I'm going to talk about pets at home and their use of data. And Caroline, data center trends.
Yeah, sustainability. Lots of big data center operators and some smaller ones as well have all been talking about sustainability recently. So I'm kind of going to share some musings on why I think that is. But and also just wrap that up in the fact that I attended virtually Schneider Electric's Innovation Summit this week as well, where they talked about sustainability as well.
Claire, now you might be a bit discomforted by the many compliments that you got about the job you did last week, but you did do a cracking job. It was brilliantly done. So I'm just going to add another compliment to the compliments you've been fending off, I guess, for a week. How did you feel about all that?
I tried really hard to be happy about how it went. And then in the aftermath, tiny things have started to pop up in my brain, like you could have done this better and this could have gone better, but I think I'll just take your compliment and move on. Thank you.
And what are your kind of feelings on the event a week on? I sat through quite a bit of it and I thought it went really well.
I think all of the topics that we discussed were extremely important. And I'm really glad that we got, the speakers in that we did to talk about those topics. And I feel like there were quite a lot of practical takeaways as well. A lot of events, especially with sort of like women in tech or diversity in tech, you go and then you hear people talk about it, but then you don't feel like you've left with any kind of sense that, like, how to move forward with that.
Okay.
So I'm so glad that the speakers were able to give, some solid concrete things that you can do right now.
Yeah, no, they were all really good. I really liked Rhonda Zalesny Green. I thought she was really cool. I really enjoyed her. Really enjoyed her talk.
Yeah, all the videos are going to go up on Computer Weekly at some point as well. So yeah, I've been working on Rhonda's video and that'll be helpful.
One of the things she said was hiring Black people is part of restorative justice. It's not a handout. Start today. She was very cool. And the woman who was the overall winner, tell us a bit about her.
So Anne-Maria Maffedon, the CEO of STEMX, she founded it, I think it was in 2013 or somewhere around then. I'll check that. But so she founded this sort of social enterprise that's aimed at getting young women and non-binary people interested in STEM subjects and to give them skills and insight into the industry and access to role models that might encourage them to take STEM subjects later on. Because there is a drop-off at A-level and degree level when it comes to STEM subjects and computing or computer science. And there was some research, probably a couple of years ago now, that indicated that some girls who drop out of STEM subjects actually regret doing it. Like they regret not taking STEM further because they realize how much those skills are worth in, you know, like the work environment and in day-to-day life as well, and how much they can sort of like contribute to your career later on. So I think, you know, like it's really good work that Anne-Marie Amaphadon does to teach young girls and non-binary young people as much about STEM as she can in the programs that STEMets run.
It's the current issue of Computer Weekly. We'll include a link to that in the summary article for the podcast too, but that goes through all the 50.
Yeah, it tells you who the 50 are and it gives you bios of the first 25.
And there's also the Hall of Fame, and that includes the last year's winner.
Yes, Debbie Forster, who's the CEO of Tech Talent Charter. And it also has the Rising Stars and an interview in there with Anne-Marie Amaphadon, who is this year's winner as well. So yeah. It's packed, that issue.
It is. It's a really good interview.
Well, thank you.
Hi, Claire, with Anne-Marie. Another quote that I really liked came from Anne-Marie, and she said to the people who have closed doors to the other Anne-Maries, you're only holding yourselves up. Embrace difference. I think she said that in her speech, which will also include a link to the video of that.
Yeah, she did. She did. She spoke quite a lot about, I really liked this, about people in the tech industry building a future. And that everybody in the tech industry is a brick. So, you know, like we're all there building this future and we're sort of like the building blocks for a possible diverse and inclusive and equitable tech sector. And then she asks at the end, what bricks are you laying and what kind of brick are you? And I really liked that. So quotable as well.
Yeah. 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 And like you said, very kind of that sort of call to practical arms, as it were, kind of doing stuff. And on the event day itself, the mental health panel, was that new for 2020, Claire?
So we had a panel on mental health last year as well.
Right, okay.
Last year we covered off, well, my co-host of the day, Dania, was the chair of last year's mental health panel. There were quite a few things covered off last year. This year, I wanted to repeat the topic, but I think that it was equally as important to do it 2 years in a row because the pandemic has obviously had a massive impact on quite a lot of people's mental health and people as well who don't normally feel anxious about stuff. I think a lot of people who normally are, you know, like, I don't know how to describe it, like normies, you know, people who don't normally get anxious or depressed.
Yeah, I don't admit to it, or yeah.
Yeah, and it's sort of, the pandemic has shone a light on, not shone a light on it, but the pandemic has caused so much uncertainty in people's lives that I think people who aren't normally impacted by this are starting to feel anxious in situations. And because they've not felt like that before, might not necessarily know how to cope with it. And I think that that's, you know, like something that we've seen in the tech sector because people are having to, you know, like tech is being leaned on to get people through, to get companies through. And there's been, you know, like extra pressure on tech workers and stuff like that. So I don't know, I thought it would be important to go through some of the stuff again.
It was a great panel. There was a lot of love for Headspace.
Yeah, for the app.
I suppose we should say other apps are available.
Yeah.
I did join in the love because I'm a Headspace advocate and user and stuff. So
yeah, a lot of people were saying how much they liked Headspace. There were recommendations for other apps as well.
Yeah.
But yeah, meditation can, like, meditation really helps some people. Just taking that 5 minutes out of your day to center yourself and your thoughts. And get away from like the noise.
Yeah, and it's very kind of useful practice in in working life. So, you know, I kind of that resonated with me.
There were some key takeaways from the day. So the overall topic was about advocacy for underrepresented groups. And when I gave some of the keynote speakers a brief, I mentioned the importance of allyship. And one of the things that really came across during the day as a theme was that allyship is a verb and a doing word. It was mentioned in quite a lot of the talks. And I think that's really important to mention, because if you do want to support other people and, you know, like use your position to understand and elevate others, you can't do that by just existing and observing. You have to do. There are tiny things that you can start doing straight away that can make a massive difference. Like even just adding your own pronouns to your email signature, for example, helps other people know that you're there to support them. If, for example, their pronouns aren't immediately known just by looking at them, for example. And education as well was a big thing. So like educate yourself on some of the challenges that might be faced by your colleagues who aren't able-bodied or who aren't neurotypical or who might be from a different ethnicity to you, people from underrepresented groups in the UK. Educate yourself about the challenges that they face so that you can better understand them and better help them to overcome them. And don't lean on those people for your education, because it's not their responsibility to educate you about their challenges.
Those
were the main things that I think came out during the day that I thought were really important. A massive thanks to our event partner, Sphinx, because, you know, they help us a massive amount with the organisation of the event as well.
Yeah.
Have other companies talking about it and being part of it is really important as well, I think.
We'll include lots of links in the article to the stories on the website, but also to the full Glory issue, which is an excellent issue. As we've said, I mean, diversity is a massive theme for us on this podcast, and we're very proud of that. Another big theme for us on this podcast, and we make no apology for this, has been the place of our furry friends in our hearts and our working lives. We've spoken in the past about welfare pups at conferences, bringing dogs to the office and things like that. So, yes, you can imagine my excitement when I was offered an interview with the Chief Data Officer of Pets at Home, Rob Kent, who was brought in 2018 by the CEO of Pets at Home. Rob had spent the previous decade working at Royal Mail, different business, but in some ways, in terms of data, similar kind of job. What Peter Pritchard wanted was to just use data to understand customers better, as with many businesses. But a twist here is they have their VIP program, their very important pets program, which has 6 million people enrolled in that. It's a lot of people. It's a lot of data, actually, which they keep in an Excel spreadsheet.
What benefits do these very important pets get?
I can answer that because I'm actually a VIP member. So yeah. if you want a real, you know, real life end user example,
yes, okay. I do not have a companion animal myself.
Okay, so how it works is every time, like a lot of loyalty programs, every time you go into Pets at Home and you make a purchase, you get a key fob or a card or whatever, all on an app now increasingly as well, and they scan it, and then that obviously the data of what you've bought ferreted away somewhere, and then it means like you'll be at home one day, you get some post, and it'll be like money off vouchers for like certain products you've bought previously. And probably the most fun bit about it, which probably just provides some kind of insight into the way my mind works, is the fact that the offers come addressed to your pets, not you. So yeah, so we used to have a crested gecko at home, and basically he was the only person 1 year when we were at home who got a Christmas card, and it was from Pets at Home's VIP program. So yeah, that's how it works. So yeah, they crunch the data to sort of sort out offers based on what you've previously bought, and maybe sort of related products as well, for you to hook you in, get you to try those as well. So that's how it works.
Oh, that's really sweet. I like that.
And they've had this data for quite a long time now, but it's in the last 18 months or so that they've been getting more and more sophisticated about it. And that's what, you know, Rob Kent has been doing in building his team and stuff. There's a nice quote from Rob in my piece, in which he says, a lot of people see us as a pet shop and as a retailer, but we see ourselves as a pet care provider, recognising the pet as a beloved part of the family. We aim to offer a wealth of products and services over the pet ecosystem. And that's stuff like the kind of vet service that they have, because they joint venture with a whole bunch of vets practices. That's Vets for Pets. And I guess there's insurance and grooming and all sorts of services that go around the pet. So the tech that's involved here in terms of the customer data, there's a GCP. They're a GCP customer, so they've got a Google Cloud platform thing going on. They're also, Caroline, I might interest you to know, and this is, comes under the purview of the CIO, they do have a cloud strategy. The data team that he's built has got 50 people in it, doing a variety of things, some specialists in data visualization, data privacy, and also data scientists doing kind of hardcore algorithm building and stuff. The other tech that he's bought in over the past 18 months, Tableau, they're a Salesforce customer. And like I said, they do their own kind of machine learning stuff as well.
With the GCP side of things, so is that where they're doing a lot of the sort of data analytics side of things, or is it more kind
of... Yeah, that's where the data goes. Or they've been migrating it. I guess before it was on a big spreadsheet. But now they've... so that they're a GCP. So over the last 18 months that he's been doing this, and he started out just with himself, which I always think is quite interesting when someone does that. They just go from themselves to building a team of however many people. So yeah, no, it was a nice interview. He had interesting things to say about the pandemic as well in terms of pets. They did a survey in April of this year, which indicated that about 90% of their customers would cut expenditure on other family matters before cutting expenditure on their pets. So British people keeping up their expenditure on their dogs and cats and guinea pigs and so on. He did confirm that there had been a significant increase in pet ownership, and they can tell that through their puppy and kitten clubs and registrations for the vets.
Are you not tempted to become a companion?
Always tempted, Claire.
Do it, Brian.
Well, I'll think about it. So Pets at Home are based in Wilmslow in Cheshire. That's where the company was founded. As it so happens, my sister and one of my sisters and her family, they live in that area. And they have a very nice dog, which is called Bella. And I think Claire and Caroline can confirm how beautiful this dog is. My sister, one of her, just because of like they live in that area, one of her friends works in marketing for Pets at Home, and she confirmed that they do indeed bring their pets into work. This is a thing, it does happen. And it's quite common. Rob himself, he has a Havanese dog, which is a very cute looking dog, and we can include a link to that in the podcast. But that dog has not been into the office yet.
Do you think it's mandatory for those who work at Pets at Home to have a pet?
I don't know. I can ask the PR if it's mandatory. I wouldn't have thought it'd be mandatory, but it does seem to be common. I guess if you work at Pets at Home, you've probably got a bit of a tendency in that direction, haven't you?
You'd imagine so.
Yeah.
How long's he worked there? Like, how long's he been in his role to not have taken his dog in yet?
He's been in that role for 18 months ish, more or less. But he works in London, and their big offices in is in Cheshire. I think that's where the data science team are, or the data team. But yes, yeah, so I pushed to one side some other case studies in order to do this one.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it was just a nice case study. From the ecosystem of pet care to the ecosystem of the planet and the role of data centres in sustainability, Caroline.
Yes, sustainability has been increasingly becoming something that I have been, well, not something I've been writing about. We've been writing about that for years and years on Computer Weekly, but it seems to be a subject of a lot more discussions in the data centre industry at the moment. So I've been having a look into that and having a bit of a ponder as to why. Obviously, you know, climate change is a big pressing problem, so we shouldn't be surprised that people are taking sustainability more seriously. But yeah, it just got me thinking, like, why is everyone talking about it a bit more now? And we're living in very strange times at the moment anyway. And I guess something we all at Computer Weekly are having to do a lot at the moment is think about the impact that COVID-19, you know, the coronavirus is having on our sort of respective beats, and like sort of in Claire's case, you know, what's the impact it's having on retail? In Brian's case, how is it shaping, you know, the use of data in the pandemic, as you alluded to with Stephen's feature at the top of the thing? Yeah, it's all very important. So yeah, but as the person who is responsible for tracking data centre and cloud infrastructure market, it's fair and possibly a little bit insensitive for me to say perhaps that a lot of firms that I write about and cover are doing pretty well out of the pandemic at the moment. Since lots of enterprises have had to essentially and overnight sort of embrace remote working, they've also had to increasingly rely on cloud-based systems and technologies to do their jobs, which has led to a ramp up in the speed at which enterprises are modernizing their operations. So obviously people are buying more cloud services, more data centers getting built as a result. And yeah, every analyst I speak to at the moment is kind of like, you know, for colocation, it's a boom time. For cloud services, it's a boom time. And this week I was sat through the Schneider Electric's 2020 Innovation Summit, and their CEO sort of succinctly put it during the keynote that if there's one positive trend to come out of the pandemic at the moment, it's the impact it's had on the pace of digital transformation within enterprises.
Mm-hmm.
And he had quite an, like I say, he did put it really, really well. He said it's the pandemic, it's been accelerating digital adoption better than any CEO could just like sort of say, right, okay, we're going to do this. It's just,
oh, that's a really good way of putting it. Yeah.
He also said CDOs as well. So, you know, shout out to Rob Kent there at Pets at Home. You're doing great work on the back of this. So, but yeah, but his comments on that were within a wider discussion at the show about the themes of sustainability and energy efficiency. And he's kind of made the point that for Schneider, who are this company that produces kind of software and systems to make sure data centers do work more sort of efficiently, you know, they don't, you know, they only use as much power as necessary. You know, he said sustainability isn't anything new. It's not a new concept for them to be championing. And, you know, helping data center operators achieve sustainability and improve how much energy they consume has been a business priority for them for many years. You know, given the amount of sort of attention that's being paid at the moment to, you know, the way that the pandemic's playing out across the world, he also sort of made the point that it's important that society doesn't lose sight of the other challenges that are facing humanity, namely climate change. So, you know, everyone's paying attention to COVID, but like, let's not lose sight of the other things that are going on in the world. And he said, you know, we know that behind the wave of COVID-19 is a huge tsunami coming at us, which is climate change, and we have to address it. So it's like, okay, I'm on it. I'll do it. I'm sat in my room in my slippers watching this virtual conference. But, you know, I felt quite riled up. I was like, yeah, let's get onto this. But his thing is that, you know, one of the ways you're going to do that, tackle climate change is through technology. So that was kind of, like I say, their big pronouncement. I wrote all of that up for Computer Weekly this week. But like I say, it was just this point he made about, you know, the fact that Schneider isn't a sort of Johnny come lately to sustainability. It just kind of struck me as quite interesting because, like I say, we've seen so many co-location data center operators and hyperscale cloud firms sort of announce initiatives over the last few months focused on sustainability or gone to sort of great lengths to talk up, you know, how much, you know, sustainability is really important. And it just kind of got me thinking, like, so, you know, it's been so many sort of companies have been talking about sustainability. It kind of got me I don't know if you're the same, but when you're an IT journalist, it kind of gets your spidey senses tingling a bit, like, oh, is this just something, is this a coincidence, or is this, could this be a trend? So, like, not long into the pandemic, for example, we had Digital Realty. They set out plans to curb their carbon emissions, I think, between now and 2030. Similar declarations from another big co-location provider called CyrusOne. And then also we've had sort of, I think it's Microsoft, they announced that they were going to do some work sort of at the start of this year around cutting their carbon emissions. But a lot of that was quite sort of, I guess, almost retrospective. They want to sort of repair the damage that the carbon emissions and cancel those out, but all of the carbon emissions they've generated since the start of the company. And Google have said similar things over the last couple of months as well.
Yeah.
And like I say, maybe I'm being deeply cynical about this, but you do sort of wonder, is there a little more to the timing of these announcements than possibly meets the eye? And like I say, my musing on it was, we've talked on the podcast before about how the data center industry's track record on sustainability isn't always the greatest. And, that has come under increasing scrutiny in recent years from lobbyists and regulators, just as the sort of, I guess, the industry and the major players in it, as they've risen to prominence a bit more. So as Amazon's cloud business has become a much bigger bit of its business, people have been paying more attention to, like, oh, actually, how do they power their clouds? How much green energy does that use? And so I'm my thinking on this is that, at the moment we're reporting on, over the last few quarters in the pandemic, like financial results of all these firms, all the big hitters in cloud and co-location, with all of it is suggesting, oh, they're doing pretty well out of the pandemic at the moment. So are they worried that maybe, will their sustainability practices come under closer scrutiny? So is this kind of like a preemptive PR, like, right, let's talk about sustainability now before people start paying closer attention to what we're actually doing? So like I say, this might be just like the cynical rantings of a woman going half crazed by lockdown, but it does feel like, say, preemptive PR a little bit to me, because no one wants to be like, we're enjoying all this great growth, and then for someone on the other side of it to say, yeah, but if this is coming at the expense of the environment, and that's just not all kind of thing.
I mean, in my beats, I've yet to speak to a software and software as a service, especially because, even the on-premises ones are tilting that way in any case. But I've yet to speak to a leading executive at any of those companies without them saying, it's been a great year.
Mm.
And I suppose in their case, maybe there isn't the same, but also we're kind of making a mess of the environment.
Well, I say, it could be me just being deeply cynical about it all. And then there was, as part of the Schneider event, they commissioned some research by 451 on all these trends around sustainability. They sort of quizzed, it was 800 data center operators, like, what's your thoughts on sustainability? How important is it to your business? And all this kind of thing. And then one of the sort of things that came out of that report, or one of the musings of the analyst at 451 Research who put it together, was the fact that actually sustainability is becoming an increasingly important sort of factor in the sort of priorities, for enterprises and for these data center firms' clients. So it's like, are they bigging up sustainability now to get more clients because they realize how important an area that is for enterprises? So yeah, the report sort of shared this stat that in the S&P 500 stock market index, the number of companies on that sort of publishing sustainability reports has gone from 20% in 2011 to 86% in 2018. So is it me being cynical, or is it just data centers responding to, like, that's what enterprises want to see, that's what our clients want to see from us, that we're doing more on sustainability? So that's, it could be quite cynical, right? But I can be quite charitable as well. Maybe they're doing it all for the right reasons. But I say it's just something that struck me, that we've had so many companies come out at once announcing initiatives and things like that.
And if it helps the environment, then does it matter why?
Well, it depends, because it depends if there's actual action behind the words, right, or like what they've announced and stuff like that. That's the most important thing, really. If it's lip service to get more clients, and then when you look along the back end of it, if you can't find the sincerity in what they're doing, or the sort of authenticity in it, it's like, are you doing it for the right reasons? Are you doing it in the right way? It's that kind of thing, really.
Mm-hmm. Much like diversity and inclusion, you can have as many statements as you like, but the figures don't lie.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, so that's it. That's basically why I sat through this week, and that got my mind mulling over some of these things. And yeah, like I said, I think, you know, hopefully everyone's doing things for the right reasons, but, you know, that's why we're journalists, to make sure they are and hold them to account.
Thank you, Caroline. As ever, you bring the data center world to life. So as usual, we'll provide links to all the stuff we've discussed in the summary article for the podcast on computerweekly.com, but you can also subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts. We'll be back in 2 weeks' time. Sadly, that's all we've got time for this week. Just remains for me to say, as ever, thank you very much to Caroline.
You're welcome.
And thank you very much to Claire.
Anytime.
And thank you very much to you for listening. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.